having more opportunities that have flexible working arrangements seems to be a really promising way to increase the fraction of women in the labor market.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. If women in developing countries want to work, what's keeping them out of the labour force? Is it the other tasks they have to do, or is it the expectations of the people around them? Two new papers experiment with the effect of offering flexibility in working conditions, measuring both job take-up and the changes in attitudes to work in two locations in India. Lisa Ho of MIT is one of the authors for both of these papers. She joins me now. Lisa, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Hello, Tim. Thanks so much for having me.
Lisa, there's so much to talk about, but we better start with the basics. How low is female labor force participation in India?
So around 30% of women aged 15 and over are economically active in India. Mm-hmm. And that's low compared to many other countries. So to give you a benchmark, in the UK or the US, the female labor force participation rate is around double that, so around 60%. And the regions of the world where female labor force participation are lowest are South Asia, the Middle East, and North Africa. And there are some countries within those regions that have rates that are actually even lower than in India. But overall, compared to a worldwide benchmark, female labor force participation in India is low.
And we know that there are women who would like to do paid work, but don't.
Yes, exactly. So Gallup and the ILO conducted a survey with women across the world, asking them if they'd prefer to stay at home or prefer to have paid work instead of or in addition to their current domestic responsibilities. And those surveys find that a much higher fraction of women would prefer to have paid work than are in the labor force. So for example, in India, 52% of women said that they'd prefer to have paid work mm-hmm. instead of or in addition to taking care of the home. But we know that female labor force participation rate there is only around 30%. So if we kind of scale up the gap between the rate of women who say that they prefer to have paid work versus the rate of women who are actually working to the population size of India and other countries where there is this gap, there are likely hundreds of millions of women across the world who prefer to have paid work, but who are currently staying at home. There was a huge unmet appetite for paid work from women across these countries.
In this research, you distinguish between the practical constraints on women that are stopping them from doing paid work and the influence of other types of gender norms. What is the difference here? Can you give me examples of each?
Sometimes there are logistical constraints that make it difficult for women to find jobs. So, for example, someone needs to take care of the children and there isn't a good option for outsourcing childcare. Those logistical constraints, though, interact with gender norms. So why is it the woman who's expected to be responsible for childcare?
Yeah.
Within the household, who those constraints and responsibilities fall on is a function of gender norms. In our study, we find that among all women, that's those who hold more traditional gender attitudes and those who hold more gender equal attitudes, we find that flexible work arrangements increase job participation for all of them. But job flexibility is more important to the women who hold traditional attitudes about household gender roles. So the importance of this flexibility for women's employment is mediated by gender norms, by expectations of who in the household is going to take responsibility for kind of taking care of the home.
Should we try to change those restrictive attitudes to the idea that women could work first? Or is it enough to do whatever works, find a job structure that works for them, even if the norms don't change?
This is a question that I'm really interested in, and it's a sort of chicken and egg problem. The findings from our study suggest that attitudes and labor supply are mutually reinforcing. So that is, when women and their household members hold attitudes that are supportive of women working, it's more likely that women would take advantage of available job opportunities. And then when women do paid work, that seems to shift their attitudes to become more supportive of women working in general. So that raises the possibility of getting stuck in an equilibrium with low female labor force participation and restrictive gender norms. When there are few examples of women doing paid work, a gender division of household roles kind of becomes normalized, and that it's the norm for women to take full responsibility for childcare, for cooking, for cleaning, and so on, and to leave earning income to the man. Then, if a job opportunity comes along in that situation, people might feel that it's not a woman's place to take it. So that's how low female labor supply might lead to more traditional gender attitudes, which in turn reinforces the low rates of women's employment. The good news there is that this mutually reinforcing process raises the possibility that we could break out of a low female labor force participation equilibrium using either the lever of changing gender attitudes or the lever of changing women's labor supply. In our study in West Bengal, we take that second approach of increasing women's labor supply. And we do that by trying to offer these job opportunities, which are better aligned with current norms of women's behavior, so that doing paid work doesn't have to be so costly to women in terms of social image or self-image concerns. And we find that when women do this paid work, even from home, their attitudes become more supportive of women doing paid work in general. So the act of doing paid work seems to be outside of their comfort zone enough that it changes their opinions about whether, just in general, it's a good idea for women to be employed. And I guess it's important to note that these study participants, most of them have never previously earned any income themselves. So for them, doing any kind of paid work and earning their own income is a really novel experience. But the effects might be very different if you take women who already have outside the home employment and have them work from home.
In this research, you offer gig work to the participants. What sort of tasks are we talking about? Why is it useful for the experiments that you're doing here?
All of the jobs we offer involve micro tasks that contribute to data sets that help train machine learning algorithms. In particular, the most common task was to record particular phrases. So as an example, set an alarm for 8 a.m., please. In Bangla or in Hindi. In order to build a data set that can train speech recognition algorithms in those languages. And one neat aspect of using these tasks is that we have a way to monitor work remotely, even when women are working from home. So we can listen to the speech recordings they submit to get a sense for whether it's really the women participants themselves doing the tasks, or whether, to take an example, we were worried about their husbands were trying to take over and do the job themselves. And that is something that we saw a few examples of. Another neat aspect of these tasks was our ability to turn on and off different job features. So we were working with an engineer at Karya, a Microsoft research startup, named Vivek Seshadri, and he kind of helped us create a version of the tasks platform that was time inflexible. So the app would only open at certain hours of the day. And that meant we could create treatment arms where women could only work during a particular time shift, and other treatment arms where women could work at any hours of their choosing. And we could do that even when women were working from home. So that was a really neat aspect of being able to use these kind of tasks platforms in the experiments.
Now, I don't want to be rude, but are these real jobs that you're offering in this experiment? Are they tasks that would exist even if your research wasn't going on?
I get that question from economists all the time without any apology. Most of the tasks were real in the sense that Karya's previous clients had asked and paid for them. We did also introduce some less realistic tasks, for example, involving reading things backwards in order to vary task difficulty. But the overall type of task, these digital microtasks, very much do exist outside of our research. One way that the tasks do differ, though, is in terms of pay. So we offered the same pay rate that Karya, the company we're working with, was offering to other workers, but I would say that's a pretty generous pay rate compared to other task platforms.
Okay, so there's two experiments here, and let's separate them. So first of all, in Mumbai, you focused on married women who live in the city. Now, you go to Mumbai, it's relatively modern, and you observe women working outside the home all the time. Why did you choose Mumbai?
So even modern urban centers in India have very low rates of female labor force participation. For example, in Mumbai, I think the rate is around 25% or less. And female labor force participation rates are actually lower in cities than they are in rural areas. So supporting urban women and getting paid work is actually very important. And if anything, I think the communities we worked with in Mumbai had more restrictive gender norms than the communities we worked with in West Bengal.
What work did you offer the participants here? What conditions did you set for the work?
In Mumbai, households were randomly assigned either to a control group that received no job offer or to a treatment group that offered jobs that lasted for 2 months. And in the treatment group, households were randomly selected to receive a job from home or a job from a nearby, what we call hyperlocal office. And then within that, the offers were cross-randomized with three wage levels, a low wage level, a medium wage level, and a high wage level. And the high wage level was really, really generous. So often corresponding to basically doubling household monthly income.
Wow. And you've got these hyper-local offices. As I understand it, they are set up specifically to remove many of the barriers to working in an office. How did you do that?
So the offices in Mumbai were designed to be as accessible as possible, basically to make it the most appealing job that's still outside the home.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, the offices were extremely close to where women lived. They were located in the same complexes or even in some cases in the same building that women lived in. So the commute was nearly non-existent. Then the offices were also women only, so there was no chance of women meeting non-family men at the office and very minimal safety concerns. And then lastly, women were also able to bring their children to the office with them, so they didn't even need to find alternative childcare to do the office job.
So looking at it from that practical basis, there is almost no difference on that practical level between working at home and working in the office. So what was the take-up of working in each location? Was it similar?
Even with removing all of these practical constraints, job take-up was much higher from home than from the office. So at the low wage level, around 22% of women took up the office job and 54% of women took up the work from home job. So work from home more than doubled job take-up, even when the office was extremely convenient in terms of location and childcare. There's clearly some other force at play that's not just about safety concerns, lengthy commutes, or lack of childcare that's preventing women from working outside the home. Even when all those constraints are relaxed, like in these offices in Mumbai, work from home still massively increases women's job take-up.
You varied the pay. As you say, the higher rate of pay was extraordinarily generous as well. Did that make a big difference to the likelihood that women would take up a job outside the home?
Surprisingly, hardly at all. So the high wage rate was nearly five times the low wage rate. And yet the high wage rate only increased job take-up by 7 or 8 percentage points. In comparison, holding wages constant but allowing women to do their work from home increased take-up by 32 percentage points.
Mm-hmm.
Women's job take-up decisions really did not respond to higher wages in the way most people would expect. But work from home makes a really big difference. Work from home had about four times the effect of increasing pay from the low wage to the high wage.
Amusingly, you gave the same opportunity to husbands as well, didn't you? What was the difference in the pattern of take-up when you offered the same job to husbands?
It was really striking that for men, work from home was just not an important job amenity.
Right.
The take-up rate was basically the same for men between the home versus the office. And men's labor supply was much more wage elastic. So going from the low wage rate to the high wage rate doubled the fraction of men who wanted the job.
So this seems to offer some quite strong clues as to what's going on here. What did you discover about the households that were less likely to take up these opportunities to work, and especially the opportunity to work outside the home?
Yeah, so we found that women who hold more traditional gender attitudes are less likely to take up the jobs. And that's particularly true for the office-based jobs. So work from home is an attractive amenity across the board, but it makes the biggest difference to women from these more traditional households. And it appears that women's husbands are the gatekeepers in many cases. In 40% of the households that turned down the job offer in Mumbai, women mentioned their husband's disapproval as why they turned down that job offer. And my co-author Suhani collected quotations from some women that I thought were really striking. Like in one household where the respondent said that her husband told her she could work outside the home over his dead body.
Wow. Moving on to West Bengal here, you offered similar types of jobs, but in different conditions. You've already explained a little bit about this. How precisely did you vary the conditions? What were you trying to find out here?
In West Bengal, we offered several variations on work from home jobs, and then we also offered these office jobs that we call local rather than hyperlocal. In West Bengal, we didn't make the offices quite as attractive as in Mumbai. Women couldn't bring their children, and the offices were a bit further away, although we did still pay for their commutes. Then from home, there were four variations on these work from home jobs, with two variations that are cross-randomized. So one was the ability to flexibly choose work hours, and then the second was the ability to multitask work with childcare. And in terms of the hours and time flexibility, some women were randomly assigned to jobs where they could work at any hours of the day, and others were assigned to jobs where they had to sign up for a particular work shift at the beginning of the month, and they could only work during that time of the day. And as I mentioned earlier, we worked with the app engineers to make that a hard constraint. For the childcare flexibility, we told some women that they could have their children next to them while they worked, and other women were told they could not have their children next to them while working. And we enforced that by listening for children's voices in the speech recordings that women submitted as part of their work.
And in this circumstance, you are specifically targeting women who have no work history. Is that correct?
We recruited women from households in and around Kolkata, and they needed to currently not be in the labor force or in skills training. They could have had a previous work history.
I see.
But in practice, like 70% said that they had never earned income prior to the study. So the women in general did have very little previous work experience, with the idea being that in the absence of the study, she would continue to be a housewife. That was kind of the set of women we wanted to enroll.
So how big were the effects in this case?
One neat result is that in both Calcutta and in Mumbai, so these two very different environments, we found that work from home doubles job take up relative to office work, even controlling for childcare. And we find that same result, so that's a great sign for replicability. In West Bengal, we also look at the effects of multitasking work with childcare and the ability to choose work hours flexibly. And we found that multitasking work with childcare was also an important determinant to whether or not women take up work. So job take-up increases by 60% when women are allowed to multitask work with childcare. And in contrast, flexible working hours seem to not be important to women's labor supply. So we found that the same take-up rates among groups that were able to work at any hours versus the groups that were only allowed to work during particular shifts of the day. So it seems that time is not actually the binding constraint for these women who are out of the labor force.
Now, these are some very encouraging results if you are thinking that the number one priority is to get women into the workforce and to ease the constraints that you've identified here. So it's clearly working for many women in this case. Is it also working as well for the employers?
Yeah, so that's an important question for feasibility. Yeah. We find that work from home has a negative effect on worker performance in terms of the quality of tasks that they submit, as well as the speed at which they complete those tasks. So that raises the possibility that employers would worry about worker performance if workers were allowed to work from home. And to look at those effects of work from home on worker performance, we use these randomly assigned surprise upgrades to participants' job offers. So that was also something that was really nice about having control over the job offer process. That allows us to separate effects that operate through selection versus treatment. So for selection, we can hold the actual work arrangement constant and compare the performance of different worker types. So compare the performance of those who accept work from office and are randomly selected to work from home with those who are only willing to work from home. Mm-hmm. And then for the treatment effects, we can hold worker type constant by looking only at those who accept an office job and then compare performance between those who are randomly selected for an upgrade to work from home with those who are not randomly selected for the upgrade and therefore have to continue with the office job. And we find negative effects that operate through both selection and treatment. So what that means is that introducing work from home draws workers in who complete the tasks more slowly. And also among workers who are willing to work from the office, when you let them work from home, they also work more slowly. And we also find they work at kind of a lower quality. That said, it's not necessarily clear why employers don't just lower wages from work from home to counteract the declines in productivity.
Absolutely, yes.
So that's an open question. One possibility is that for some other jobs that don't involve micro tasks, workers' output might be less additive. And so it wouldn't work to, say, take two lower paid, less productive at-home workers and add them together to get a higher paid office-based worker. But at least for micro tasks, it seems like that would be possible. I think there's still a lot to understand here, though. And in our study so far, we've really focused on labor supply, and we're interested in exploring the labor demand side next.
You have so many results, but there's an extra one we need to talk about finally here. Whether finding these jobs, getting some work experience, acted as a gateway to getting further employment in the future, whether it lowered those barriers. How did you test that?
We offered two different rounds of jobs and measured how experience with the first round of jobs affected take-up of the second round of jobs.
Okay.
So 2 to 3 months after the initial RCT with those first set of jobs, we returned to all the study participants and we offered them another set of jobs that again varied in job flexibility. And we offered the same digital jobs as before and also non-digital jobs to understand if any effects on interest in work were general to interest in paid work or whether they were about digital specific skills or preferences. And I guess as a preview, we didn't find any difference between the non-digital and the digital jobs. So it seems like the effects are just about paid work in general. And this gateway job effect result we found is that women who were offered a job sequence where the first job was more flexible than the second job are more likely to take up jobs in the second round than women who are kind of dropped in the deep end in the sense that they just immediately are told, now you need to work from the office instead of being kind of eased in to the work from office by first being offered work from home jobs. So what we're finding is that women who are offered work from home jobs, they kind of value the ability to take these multiple small steps towards an office job rather than trying to take just one large leap. And we find that this effect is entirely concentrated on the 70% of women who had no previous work experience. So it's really about this being the very first time that they're earning income and working for someone outside of the family.
What conclusions do you draw about this type of gig work as a way to give women access to the labor market?
There's clearly a lot of demand for doing this type of gig work, at least at these wage rates, from women.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the women who were enrolled in our study, women with very little previous work experience, were really excited about the opportunity to earn income and really want a way to do that that's flexible in terms of the time they can work as well as the ability to work from home. Having more opportunities that have flexible working arrangements seems to be a really promising way to increase the fraction of women in the labor market.
These were temporary jobs, however. Does it tell us anything about what would happen if there were permanent jobs on offer?
So I think anything I'd say about applying the impact to permanent job offers would have to be a bit speculative.
Hmm.
I think one place where the temporary nature is particularly important is for the gateway job effect that we find. So when women are offered this work from home job before an office job, what we call this gateway job sequence, they weren't given the option of continuing to work from home. So they were either just given the choice of work from office or don't have any paid work at all. If they'd been given the option to continue working from home, it's possible that some women could have gotten kind of stuck working at home in the same way that Eliana LaFerrera and her co-authors have been studying under what conditions intermediate norms act as a stepping stone versus becoming absorbing equilibriums.
Mm.
So I think the temporary nature in this case is really important for work from home to act as a stepping stone rather than an absorbing equilibrium where we just have women working at home in all circumstances. But that's something we'd really like to test in future work to better understand under what conditions work from home becomes a barrier to outside the home work rather than a stepping stone when it's a permanent job opportunity rather than just a temporary one.
In the past on Vox Dev Talks, we have covered the influence of government programs to try to change, to affect norms, give women more agency to be able to work outside the home. What comes across with that is extremely hard, very slow work, which doesn't always have instant results. This seems to be something very different. It's the sort of intervention that the private sector could lead because it's offering the jobs. Would they? Is there enough in it for them to be able to take this up and push it forward?
Yeah, so we think this is a really promising area for the private sector to be involved, increasing the fraction of women with access to the labor market. One promising trend is that jobs with flexible work arrangements and that have relatively high pay are on the rise in any case without any intervention.
Mm-hmm.
But we do think there are at least a couple reasons that flexible work arrangements might be underprovided. One is just that it's not clear that employers necessarily understand the fraction of the workforce who they miss out on by not offering flexible job opportunities. So I think there's some opportunity just in telling employers how many more potential workers they could get if they made their jobs more flexible. The second thing is that for women who find work from home to be a helpful stepping stone to outside the home work, employers wouldn't necessarily internalize that benefit. Being able to work with an employer who's interested in having women come to work at the factory or an office and have at-home trainings that are temporary and initial might be a helpful way for them to recruit more women. were interested in finding an employer who's interested in getting female workers to try out and see whether that could work in practice.
So many challenges, but from your work, we can see that there are many opportunities as well. Lisa, thanks for talking about it.
Thanks so much for having me, Tim.
So two papers to tell you about. The first one, Bringing Work Home, Flexible Work Arrangements as Gateway Jobs for Women in West Bengal. And the authors are Lisa Ho, Suhani Jalota, and Anahita Karandika. Also, What Works for Her, How Work From Home Jobs Affect Female Labour Force Participation in Urban India. And Suhani and Lisa are the authors for that. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe. Find us wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear in Vox Dev Talks, please review us. Leave a rating as well, and then more people will hear our episodes.